The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to The Guardian Football Weekly. It's fun to say out loud. Barcelona 2, Bayern Munich 8. Open brackets, EIGHT. Close brackets. What happened there then? Did Barca give up? Are Bayern just a cliche-ridden, hyper-organized German machine? How screwed are Barca? What will Messi do? And who'll be the new manager? Will it be Pep? Or is that overthinking things? City go weirdly defensive against the seventh best team in France. And no English, Spanish or Italian teams in the semi-finals. Does that mean all those leagues are cancelled? Or is it because it's a cup competition, so teams go out sometimes? In the Europa, Manchester United lose to Sevilla. As Bono plays a blinder, we ask how many U2 puns is too many? Answer, one. You've sent in plenty of questions, we'll answer them. And that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Barry Glendenning, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks, Max.
Great, I'm delighted to hear it. Mark Langdon from The Racing Post, the butter wizard of Football Weekly, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, Max.
Excellent news. And Sid Lowe in Spain. Hey, Sid.
Hey, Max, how are you?
I'm tremendous, thanks very much. So the Champions League semi-finals are set. PSG versus RB Leipzig, Bayern versus Lyon. The first time since 1991 that there won't be an English, Spanish or Italian side in the quarterfinals of the Champions League. Matty said, what is the best league in the world, Bundesliga or Ligue 1? Barcelona 2, Bayern Munich 8. I mean, this is extraordinary, isn't it, Sid? First defeat by a six-goal margin since a 6-0 defeat to Espanyol in 1951. Their first concession of 8 in a match since an 8-0 defeat to Sevilla in 1946. I'm sure you weren't surprised they lost, Sid, but 8-2.
Yeah, no, to be honest, I wasn't surprised they lost and I wasn't surprised they were hammered. And I did think they would get beaten and beaten heavily, but obviously you never anticipate 8. You never think it would be that bad. In fact, you know, when they equalised and having watched that kind of, what were we at that stage, 15 minutes in or so, and two or three times Barcelona had escaped down that right-hand side. And I thought, well, actually, maybe if they're able to hang on to this, they can find a way to make a match of this. There's a little bit of me, you know, that thinks that there's a line from PK after the game, and PK spoke brilliantly. I mean, he only spoke for about a minute and a half, but he managed to get everything into that minute and a half, which is significantly better than I'm now doing.
Or I've ever done, Sid, but that's fine.
Or I've ever done, exactly. He used a line which I think was sort of summed up nicely. He said, I hope some good comes of this. You know, I hope this is worth something. And that, I suppose, is the one thing that kind of people have been clinging to. The fact that this was 8, rather than maybe Barcelona sort of just about muddling their way to, say, a 3-1 defeat or something like that, I think has meant, okay, all of those problems that we've seen coming that have been happening repeatedly over the last 5 years, you know, they let in 4 in Turin, 4 in Paris, 3 in Rome, 4 at Anfield. All those things now come to head to say, this is absolutely definitive now. The problem they've got is they actually don't have the tools now to kind of start the revolution that people are now talking about.
How come they don't have they don't have the players? They don't have the setup? What don't they have? They've surely got quite a lot of money. Or have they not got any money?
Well, that's the question. They don't have the culture. They don't have the money. They have the only way they can sign players or significant numbers of players is to sell significant number of players. But the truth is, you look at their squad and there's very, very few players that you can see there that have an obvious exit. There's no trust in the sporting director. Obviously, no trust in the coach, no trust in a lot of the players. But in particular, this goes to the very, very top. This is presidential. This is about this board of directors. But it's very, very difficult to see how they come up with a solution now.
Mark, did you think their players gave up? I was watching Messi for the last 25 minutes and he didn't move at all. And I wondered if that's just what Messi does, if he just stands still and waits. You know, sometimes if you don't move, you make space for yourself. But it looked like he'd kind of given up in that game to me.
Yeah, I think that's probably, you know, a whole season's worth of frustration just coming out in that last 20, 25 minutes as far as he was concerned. There were a couple of times when he gave the ball away and, you know, he kind of walked in the opposite direction to where the ball was then going as Bayern had stolen it off of him. So it wasn't his finest sort of moment, but I mean, he'd be sort of the least of their problems in terms of sort of playing staff, really. I suppose the future of Messi, you know, is probably, up for debate now. But just looking at that Barcelona sort of team there, as Sid was speaking about, you know, some of the players that they'll maybe have to get rid of. But you know, Jordi Alba's 31, Piqué 33, Busquets 32, Rakitic 32, Vidal and Messi 33, Suarez is 33. They've just brought in Pjanic from Juventus for next season. He's 30. And whoever comes in, I think it's got a horrendous... I mean, it's a job that you're always going to take because it's Barcelona, but it just feels like a really bad job, I think, for somebody to take in the short term. And, you know, the Koeman and Pochettino seem to be sort of the two that Spanish press are talking about. I mean, I think if you've got any sense, you just leave that job for now.
Yeah, there's a couple of things there. I mean, and not only that, but as you say, this is an old team, and so it's one that the talk is about rejuvenating it. But obviously, to have the money to bring in the players that you want, this is similar, I suppose, to the situation with Gareth Bale at Real Madrid. That if you've got players of a certain age and paid a lot of money, it becomes quite difficult to move them on. So you talk about those older players. Well, Suarez on €15 million a year. Coutinho, who they sent on loan because they couldn't sell him, and now will try to sell him again. Who's the only Barcelona player, of course, who came out of the Lisbon game with any credit and still standing because he scored twice. He's on €10.5 million a year. Messi's on €39 million a year. Then you've got, you know, the players they bought in to try and replace Neymar. And this is part of their problem, is that they were so desperate and so weakened and so debilitated by the departure of Neymar. They went crazy trying to sort this out. Dembele, who's had three seasons and, in fairness to him, largely for injury, hasn't had an impact. He's earning €10 million a year. They spent €120 million signing Griezmann, who's on €23 million a year. This is the guy that they've signed him, and he may well have gone to the only club in the world where the only player in the world who's better than him in his two positions is already there. And so this tells you something, I think, about the kind of the planning difficulties they've got. And as you say, it's an older team that they want to rejuvenate. But it's very, very difficult to do that. So what do they do if they've got no money? Well, turn to the youth team, which in theory was the, if you like, the kind of the badge of identity of Barcelona for years. And yet, to do that, you've got a genuine trust and belief in that youth system. And I don't think, honestly, that this board of directors has that.
You were talking there, Sid, about that there's no obvious exit for various players because of their age. But there does seem to be an obvious exit for one player. And that would sort out a lot of their financial difficulties, you would imagine. I read somewhere this morning that the only players Barcelona haven't put up for sale are Ter Stegen, Frankie de Jong, Lenglet and Messi, obviously. But it looks like it might be time for Lionel Messi to go. And do you think that could happen?
Right, well, let me just very briefly say on those four players, these are the ones that the club believe are untouchable. Well, De Jong, obviously, came last summer, €70 million. You don't get rid of him yet, and he's theoretically the linchpin of your midfield for years. Clement Longley, who, yeah, he's untouchable in the sense that, well, he's not done anything wrong. He's been reasonably successful. He's a steady central defender. But I think, actually, if there was a good offer for them, they would take that because they're that desperate. And also, there's a belief that this is a guy who probably should be your backup centre-back rather than your first-choice centre-back alongside Piqué. And the other two, Ter Stegen, who's only the 11th best-played player in the squad, is stalling over a new contract, doesn't like what he sees, so he may well go. So in other words, two of the four that you think are untouchable may not consider themselves untouchable. Ter Stegen, who's thinking about going, and the other one is Messi. And that story, you may have seen it last night, it was broken by Marcelo Belcher, who's the guy who first announced the story that Neymar was going to PSG, and everyone said, nah, don't be silly. He's now announced Messi wants to leave. Now, we don't know, and I must admit, I don't fully buy it, but let's see how this plays out. But then you're in a position where maybe Messi forces a departure. The problem is, Baz, as you say, this would resolve a lot of things. But who pays for Messi? He's 33. Who pays a massive transfer fee and his salary now, however brilliant he is? And so I'm not actually sure that even that's a clear exit, has a clear exit.
Gerard Piqué said, Sid, we have hit rock bottom. Have they hit rock bottom? I mean, could it get worse? The way you're explaining it is they've got all these old men who will just carry on there, just sort of hobbling about. And, you know, they might come third or something terrible.
Well, Gerard Piqué said, I mean, to link Gerard Piqué to your line about the old men, he said, if we need new blood and we have to go to enable this to happen, for Barcelona to get back on course, I'm the first to go. But I think the more important thing he said was, we need structural changes. And I'm not talking about the coach or the players. In other words, I'm talking about the board of directors. I'm talking about the president. He knows better than anyone that this is a problem from the very, very top. And so could it get worse? Well, to be honest, if the changes are not made properly, then I guess it's plausible that it does. But it's hard to look at this and not think this is rock bottom, isn't it? I mean, you just let in 8 goals.
Yes, and you let in 8 goals to Bayern Munich, who are also playing in this game, Mark. Leo Goretzka on whether it hurt to humiliate his childhood hero, Leo Messi. No, it didn't hurt. It was quite fun, actually, he said. Thomas Müller comparing the game to the Germany 7-1 win over Brazil. Against Brazil, we didn't dominate this much. Today, the superiority was greater. I mean, they were sensationally... Well, were they sensationally good? I saw some people saying the real issue is here, Bayern actually didn't play that great for part of this game. Yeah,
it feels a bit hipsterish to sort of go, and Bayern weren't very good when they've just scored 8. I don't think they were perfect, particularly in that first sort of 25 minutes. Bayern did cause, as Sid alluded to right at the top there, they did cause Bayern some problems. You know, the ball over the top was quite an easy one. To work out, really. Didn't have to do that much to get in behind Bayern. For the last hour, they did steamroller them completely. I think the, I'm trying to remember which goal it was now, I think it was the fifth one that Kimmich scored from the Davies when he just completely destroyed Semedo. That was, I think, a true sign of what this Bayern team is all about, because they were 4-2 up. There was potential for Barcelona at that stage to still get into the game, and you've got one fullback on the byline sort of cutting it back for the other fullback to tap it in, and that they're a very aggressive team, and the way that Hansi Flick has moved them on from what we saw under Kovac, when even under him they scored 7 at Spurs, but I mean generally speaking their performances weren't very good. He said that it was impossible for this Bayern team to be able to play like Liverpool, and I think that humiliated the players in some respects, because they considered themselves at that level. And I think it just goes to show that it was actually the coach that wasn't at that level rather than the players. They were they were great in a number of positions. So much pace on the flanks with Gnabry. Oh, Perisic had a really good game as well. I mean, he's somebody that they haven't got full-time locked down yet. But Thiago, if this is to be swan song, it's a wonderful way for him to go out. I suppose there is a bit of vulnerability to them at centre-half, but overall it was a great performance and probably could have scored more as well.
I hope they re-edit the Tottenham Amazon documentary, and when they come off against Bayern having conceded 7, they go, actually, it's not too bad, lads. You know, they're going to score more against a better team, aren't they? Hoffenheim UK says, how would you describe Thomas Müller to someone who's never seen him play? Brilliant player, yet doesn't seem to be very good at any one part of the game. He's not particularly skillful. He's not fast. He's not strong. He's not known for a wide range of passing. Mark, you're scoffing over there.
I mean, yeah, I mean, that's outrageous, really, to say that. I mean, yeah, he does score scruffy goals. There is that about him. But he has been one of the main reasons why he's the one change really to the team in terms of what Hansi Flick has done, because I think maybe Kovac thought that about Thomas Müller as well. But I think he's made Lewandowski play better. I think he makes the whole team play better. He's the one that starts to press off a lot of the time. He finds space. I think if you're at a stadium, you can sort of see some of the stuff that he does maybe more than on TV. I think it's really harsh, actually.
Which was your favourite of the 8 goals, Barry? I mean, I can't remember any of them now, because it's just when there's 8, there's too many, aren't there?
I think it would have to be the one that Mark alluded to earlier, where Alphonso Davies absolutely eviscerated Barca down that left wing, cutting along the byline, and the pullback. It was just out of this world. And It sort of marked, this is officially a humiliation. You know, Barcelona were just, their defending was absolutely hapless in the face of an incredible incendiary attack, like a knife going through butter. Sorry, I've mentioned butter now. Mark is going to get excited.
You made me hungry, Baz. I'm really hungry now.
Just have a spoonful of it, Mark. You'll be fine. One spoonful. of Lerpak per part, and you'll be fine. Sid, will Coutinho be welcome back, or that they don't? Do Barcelona want him back? What's the deal there?
But that's the perfect segue, because Barry was saying that goal was the kind of, if you like, the embodiment of the humiliation. In a way, the real embodiment of the humiliation is Coutinho scoring the last two. And the way that Coutinho lifts the hand in this kind of pathetically apologetic way, as if to say sorry. And then I thought to myself, I was thinking about this, I think maybe he's not actually saying sorry. Maybe the patheticness of the gesture is him thinking, shit, this is what I've got to go back to. and it was, I mean, look, the thing with Coutinho is, and you know, this brings us back to, and apologies for doing this, it brings us back to this whole idea of how do Barcelona resolve this, which is that Coutinho goes to Bayern, but he goes to Bayern on loan because they can't sell him. So the plan was he comes back this summer and they sell him to the Premier League because he's still got a market in the Premier League, they keep telling us. He's still got a market. We can make money on Coutinho. First of all, obviously, they're not going to make the 120 million plus 40 million in objectives that they bought him for. But even if they were to make 50 or 60, even that looks difficult in this market. So now they may well be in a position where they could have to keep him. And I think he probably will be welcomed back. I don't think he'll be blamed at all for this. And there's no sense of anyone pointing the finger at him for this. But there is that doubt about whether he's good enough, whether he's a player who should be part of this new generation of Barcelona players. But this is, again, it comes back to this whole thing of, look at the mess they've made of this. The money they've spent, you know, they got that Neymar money. They absolutely lost their heads and they wasted it all.
Finally, Sid, how is this being covered in Spain?
It's been treated as a disgrace. It's been treated as, right, that's it. We need to throw absolutely everything out. That will start today. You know, there's a board meeting now as we're talking. I think at the end of that board meeting, we'll probably be told that Eric Abidal, the sporting director, has gone. Because, of course, you know, a fourth sporting director in 4 or 5 years, well, that'll solve it, won't it? Because clearly the problem is there. We've been told, you know, Setien will go. In fact, they basically said last night that Setien was gone without saying it publicly. Because, of course, the manager who was there for 6 months is the problem over the last 5 years. But yeah, there is a sense that this whole thing has got to be thrown out. And let me just make that one point that I was going to make. And I'm going to make it very briefly, I promise, which is it's worth remembering this. Artur Melo couldn't play the other day because he'd been sold, swapped for Pjanic. Now, he could have played anyway because Pjanic was still playing for Juventus, but he refused. But it's worth pointing this out again and again and again and again and again, because it reminds us of the situation at Barcelona. He was sold for financial reasons, not footballing ones. That deal was a pretend two separate deals, but in fact a swap deal designed to balance the books to protect the board of directors from personal liability for failing to meet their budgetary targets. That's why that happened, not for footballing reasons.
So for the first time in 14 years, neither Cristiano Ronaldo or Lionel Messi will be in the Champions League semi-finals, and neither will Manchester City, dumped up by Lyon, and we'll do that in part two. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. Manchester City 1, Lyon 3. Podreg says, given his habit of overthinking things and trying to look cleverer than others, should Pep make the obvious move and leave City to join the Athletic? Which I thought was a brilliant question. Charlie, what's more likely to happen first? Pep lifts the Champions League again, or Mark Langdon dines on roasted vegetable kebabs? City knocked out the quarterfinal stage for the third time out of three attempts. Guardiola's last final was in 2011. His last semi was in 2016. So much has been said about Pep overthinking things, Barry. What was he doing? Lyon came seventh in Ligue 1. City had just knocked out Real Madrid.
Well, look, Lyon came seventh in Ligue 1. I don't think they're the seventh best team in Ligue 1. They're better than that. But it was a bizarre selection. City could easily have won the game if Raheem Sterling had scored that goal, that sitter he missed, but they didn't. And so now Pep is being accused of overthinking things again. I kind of likened it to if you're on MasterChef and you're given all these lovely ingredients to make a nice Thai green curry. You got, you know, your potatoes, your green beans, sunflower oil, garlic, paste, kind of coconut milk, fish sauce. And
are you reading a recipe that you've written down there?
Yes, I am. Lime leaves, basil, rice and chicken breasts. And you know, make something nice out of that. And obviously, you're going to go for a Thai green curry, and then you just serve up potatoes with chicken breasts and no embellishment of any kind. And that seemed to be what Pep did. We had all these lovely ingredients, and which he chose to leave sidelined and fielded, you know, Rodri and Ilkay Gundogan, and instead of either of the Silvers or...
Phil Foden's your kaffir lime leaves, is he? In this?
Yeah, Phil Foden's my lime zest or my lime leaves. And
Mahrez is the lemongrass, right?
Yeah, Mahrez is your lemongrass. So he eventually got thrown in the pot just to add a little bit of zest after the 55-minute mark. But yeah, it was a very strange selection, a very strange formation, sending City out to play in a style they're not used to. It could be argued they're such elite players, they should be able to play in any style, but it seemed they weren't.
You said so many vegetables there that Mark Langdon actually fainted. Do you put potatoes in your Thai green curry, Baz?
Oh, yeah. It's very nice.
Interesting. I mean, I'd put them in a massaman, but I wouldn't put them in a green curry.
Slice them up first, but I like it.
Putting a whole King Edward in a Thai green curry. Anyway, we're perhaps moving away from the point. I see the point you're making. Did Pep overthink things at Bayern?
I thought at Bayern he was really unlucky. That he reached three semi-finals. The one against Atletico Madrid, I mean, they were just Atletico'd at the end of that, really. I mean, they should have gone through. They missed a penalty. They dominated the game. I thought even against Real Madrid, when eventually they lost the first leg in the Bernabeu 1-0, and that was another game where they dominated, couldn't get the away goal, and then conceded really early on at home. And it was one of those, you know, just got away from them. I thought he was, I think it was just bad luck and that kind of, you know, what can happen in the knockout competition that did for him at Bayern. And I think that the people that say, oh, you know, you have to win the Champions League at Bayern, I don't think the people at Bayern see it like that at all. I think with Man City, I think there are more questions that need to be answered, because they've gone out to some pretty average teams, really. In the last 2 years, Lyon and Tottenham and the Spurs team that was missing players, even the Liverpool one. And I was looking at some of the times when he's been accused of overthinking it. And it's difficult to argue against it, because against Monaco, he played Fernandinho at left back in the first leg. And in the second leg, he played Kolarov at centre back. Then I looked at the game at Anfield when he dropped Raheem Sterling, or rested him, and played Laporte at left back. Against Tottenham in the first leg, he didn't play De Bruyne. And then he goes to the back three against Lyon. So there is definitely some kind of fear there now, I think, as far as the Champions League goes. But I think he was right to be fearful, because actually when he moved to the four-man defence, that was when they got caught on the counter-attack twice. So I think that's what he was really worried about. But I just felt it was more the fact that they didn't actually impose themselves on the game. I think they could have played that back three and been fine, but the wing backs were far too deep. Cancelo and Walker almost made it into a back five. And when we've seen City at their absolute best, they get to the byline, do the cutbacks, and then tap it in. And the other way that they score a lot of their goals is through balls, whether that's a Silva or De Bruyne in the central areas. But they didn't have anybody kind of in there to sort of supply Gabriel Jesus, I didn't think. And it wasn't until the second half, when they were more aggressive, that they actually looked like creating chances. So I think Pep Guardiola has made, some mistakes in terms of the Champions League. But I saw one Portuguese journalist saying on Saturday night, imagine Mourinho had spent 500 million and, you know, all he had for one season was an EFL Cup or, a League Cup. And, people would be absolutely slaughtering him.
Mark, do you think the fact that City played Lyon twice last season and lost one, drew one in the Champions League had any bearing on his decision to go with this side on the other night? I know Silvino was in charge of one game rather than Rudy Garcia, but do you think that might have had a bearing on his selection?
I think he probably will have done, because he famously overanalyzes every single game and every single opponent. And, they did get caught on the counter-attack in those games last season, and maybe did feel like they needed that extra bit of defensiveness in midfield. But ultimately, I think they still would have won the game had Sterling not missed an open goal, because they were on top at that stage. Even though they were 2-1 down, they were on top, and you would have felt like they, with another half an hour, that they probably would have won it. So that's not his fault, is it? If Sterling misses an open goal, that can't be Guardiola's fault.
maybe the moment's gone, but would you say Phil Foden is the fresh coriander that you realise you haven't put in after you've finished eating the dinner and you just look to the side and you think, ah, shit, that would have made it a whole lot better. Tony says, has Raheem... Sorry, Sid.
No, sorry, it was a completely bollocks anecdote that was going to be totally uninteresting and even less interesting if I now give it to you. But basically, when we grew up as kids, every single Sunday lunch, we'd finish and my mum would go, oh, crap, the Yorkshire puddings are still in the oven. Every Sunday without fail.
Tony says, has Raheem Sterling miss finally knocked Ronnie Rosenthal off his perch? I only gave Sterling's an 8.5 out of 10 on the Rosenthal-Richter scale of misses because Sterling's not under control of the ball, right? It's a cross. And so that instantly makes it harder than Ronnie Rosenthal's. But it is a sensational miss, isn't it, Mark?
Oh, yeah. I suppose sensational as well. I don't think Pep thought it was sensational. I don't see how you can make any excuses for it, really. I mean, professional footballer shouldn't miss that opportunity. I don't really care that it was crossed in. You know, you just shouldn't miss. He took his eye off it, I suppose. But no, it was the latest way that for sort of City to go out and for Pep to become increasingly frustrated by this Champions League.
RB Leipzig 2, Atletico Madrid 1. RB Leipzig reached their first ever Champions League quarterfinal just 11 years after their inception. Tyler Adams' first goal for Leipzig, the first American to score a Champions League goal in the quarterfinals or later. And this is a great stat. Leipzig, the first team not containing Ronaldo ever to eliminate Diego Simeone's Atletico Madrid in the Champions League knockout stage. Did they deserve it, Mark?
Yeah, I think they did. And I think Diego Simeone admitted that afterwards. I was a bit surprised, actually, how they sort of got into their rhythm so quickly because they'd been off for a while. And I felt that they, apart from sort of that spell just either side of Atletico's goal when João Felix was really sort of pulling the strings for Atletico, yeah, I felt that Leipzig were the better team. And actually, after the game, Nagelsmann said that maybe the absence of Timo Werner helped the team because more players took responsibility, but also he felt that being able to kind of have a more movement in midfield was one of the reasons for the success. Easy to say, I suppose, after they've won, but I was really impressed with Leipzig. I expected Atletico to do what Atletico, you know, have done so often to teams and just hit Leipzig on the counter-attack, but it was a very controlled performance from them, and they definitely deserve to go through, yeah.
Sid, where are Simeone's Atleti? Is he trying to change them from kind of dirty street dogs into some sort of ticker-tacker side? Or is he just trying to remake street dog Atleti?
Well, I mean, this is the kind of the recurring debate. And it speaks to what Mark was talking about, that you know, the idea that you think Atleti will do what Atleti do. And they weren't even really able to do that. And I think one of the problems is that Atletico have had, and this has been a discussion for at least the last three seasons, that every year there's a sense that, are they going to evolve into something else? And then they kind of go back to what they know. And of course, this season, it's even more problematic. And we saw it the other night that, if you like, the embodiment of this was João Felix. So this is a guy they spend 126 million euros on, a 19-year-old kid, very, very creative, clearly incredibly talented, but doesn't start the game. They don't really create very much. They don't really do very much. I mean, there's a little bit of the Man City debate in this, which is, come on, you know, you're up against Leipzig. You're not against Liverpool, where you can be defensive and it's okay. You're not up against City or Real Madrid. So you can go and attack them a bit more, and they didn't. And that debate is there. So the headline on the front cover of Marca the following morning, to just kind of give you a view of what the debate is, was something like, stinginess gets paid for in the end. You know, in the end, you pay for being tight, for not being creative, for not trying to attack teams. And that debate is always there. But I think one of the difficulties is that they've built a squad that maybe now is built to do something else, but they've got a manager who still believes in the original style. And let's go back to Barry's Thai curry here, because Simeone said
I'm going to be starving by the end of this part.
Simeone said this back in, I think it was September, October, in an interview. He was asked about this kind of evolution and doing something different. And he said, we like pizza. And if you like pizza, you eat pizza and you make pizza. That's what we are. And he was trying really hard, I think, to to kind of put the brakes on this kind of increasing debate that you should play more football, that you should be, well, football is such a loaded phrase. You should be, you know, you should be more creative, more open, more attacking. He said, we are what we are, and this is what we do. And we do pizza, and we don't do any pissing about, none of your herbs and spices and stuff, Baz. You just put the pizza in the oven. And I think that is now the debate. And so that has provoked, I think, for the first time, a little bit of a debate about whether Simeone has almost become a victim of his own success. You know, he's made Atletico Madrid so good that people are now demanding more from them than he can really deliver, or that he really believes in to deliver.
All right, that'll do for part two. Part three, we'll discuss Manchester United 1, Sevilla 2. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Okay, then Europa League semi-final, Manchester United 1, Sevilla 2. Were United unlucky, Barry? They had lots of chances, came up against another excellent goalkeeper, but were opened up very easily, especially for Sevilla's winner.
You could argue they were unlucky, but scoring goals is what it's all about, isn't it? And they missed so many chances. It's quite funny because in recent weeks, everyone's been extolling the virtues of their front three and of Bruno Fernandes. And when it came to the crunch, they failed to deliver and lost their third semi-final of the season. Not a good result for them, not a good result for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. I was listening to a radio phone-in for a while last night, and there was no unanimous opinion. Some were saying that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is in over his head and needs to go. That's something I agree with, but I wouldn't necessarily judge him on one performance in his semi-final. They perhaps should have won, but didn't. And then others were saying he's done a terrific job to get United to third and three semi-finals. The truth maybe is somewhere in between, but I don't think they were unlucky. Their defending was atrocious. They could have conceded more than two. They should have scored more than one. And on the balance of play, I'd say they probably deserve to lose. I mean, people say that, the goalkeeper was brilliant. But, you know, the goalkeeper is an integral part of the team. If he plays well, he's expected to play well. He's supposed to play well. He was getting, I think, overpraised for some of his save. It was just the sheer volume of saves he made that... I don't think they were unlucky.
My big takeaway from that is man learns nothing from radio phoning. Shock. a lot of Ollie's got some criticism, Mark, and I wonder, is that because he deserves criticism or because a lot of us who wrote him off want to be proved a little bit right at some point?
Yeah, I think there probably is a little bit of that. And what Baz was saying there about, I think you can say he's done a good job, but that he's not good enough for where Manchester United sort of eventually want to be. I think that both of those aspects are true. More often than not, they would have won that game because they did create enough opportunities. But once again, I think there's talk about bringing in Sancho, and after the game on British TV, it was they need a striker, they need forward players. I mean, pretty obvious to me that their issues are at the other end of the pitch. I'm still not convinced by the centre-backs, and I thought that Lindelof completely lost De Jong for the goal, and Williams and Shaw down that left-hand side. I mean, particularly Williams, there's probably more to come from him, but I think at that level, it looked like Sevilla maybe targeted him a little bit, and that there was space to be had. So I think Solskjaer has done well, and he's done better than I expected him to. But if United want to be at that kind of Liverpool and Manchester City or before this season, but that kind of level, I think they probably will need to make an upgrade in that area. But, I mean, it was a really enjoyable game, made even better by all of the sort of debatable refereeing decisions, because that meant we got the views of Peter Walton, and you can never have enough of those.
Well, we'll do the penalty. I was actually very pleased that penalty was given, because quite often if the player gets his shot away, it doesn't really matter what a defender does to that player after the shot's taken. It's never given as a foul. And I thought that was an absolute penalty. When you mentioned Peter Walton, he did say when Sevilla scored their equaliser, And I know that a throw-in went the wrong way, but at the end he went, unfortunately, the goal stands. And I couldn't work out, is that because he wanted Manchester United to win or because as a referee he just wants to disallow all goals? But it seemed ludicrous in commentary, didn't it? Sid, is it just Sevilla who take this tournament very seriously in Spain, or is it viewed very differently there?
No. I mean, look, it depends. A lot of teams, you take, for example, Espanyol, who admittedly that was because they were in relegation trouble at the bottom of the table. They weren't playing their strongest possible team in the Europa League. I think a lot of teams don't take it that seriously until quarter final level, a bit like in the UK. But Sevilla definitely do. I think Sevilla got there in the end through La Liga, in part, of course, because of Champions League qualification. But also what Sevilla have done, and they're very, very conscious of this, is that they've built, if you like, a place for themselves, an identity for themselves through this competition. Now, of course, they'd rather do it in the Champions League. Of course, they would rather be winning the European Cup than the Europa League. But there is value in glory. And I remember speaking to Unai Emery about this when he was at Valencia, and Valencia finished, I think it was third 3 years in a row. And so Champions League qualification 3 years in a row. And he went to Sevilla in part because they're saying, right, we want to be in the Champions League. But when he went there, and he tells this story, he says he got there and he likes the idea of glory in every game and trying to win every match and winning competitions, you know, as having a value in their own right. But he said when he got to Sevilla, they were the ones who said to him, yeah, you might have got to Champions League 3 years in a row, but you don't know what it's like to actually win something. And so he then, of course, went and won three of these things. This is their sense of our value is created through the glory of winning something, even if it is the second competition. So yeah, they definitely take it seriously. Also, this year is you know, it's been a strange year for lots of reasons. I think it's really important for Julian Lopetegui, who came in and there was a lot of doubts about him to start with. And yeah, it's the Sevilla Cup, isn't it now?
Has Eva Benega always been this good?
Eva Benega has always been this talented, but probably not this consistent. Eva Benega you'll know some of these stories, but Eva Benega is the man who broke his foot when he ran over his own foot in a petrol station forecourt. You know, he let the handbrake off and the car rolled and he tried to stop it. Eva Benega is the man who turned up at training one day at Valencia and said, could you help out, please? My car's 100 metres up the road and it's on fire. Eva Benega is the man who was caught doing a little bit of one-handed internet surfing. So there's been moments in his career where things haven't been right, but he's always had the talent. I think what we've seen is the increase in... it's a horrible cliche, and I almost don't want to use it, but I can't think of a better word. The increase, if you like, in maturity, in commitment, in perhaps in professionalism. But he's always been a lovely footballer, and it's about getting kind of continuity of performance out of him. And one of the things that's made him very interesting this time around is he's going to Saudi Arabia at the end of the season. When this was announced, there was a sense that, well, that's it. He'll down tools now. He won't bother. And he said, no, I want to finish right. I want this season to end in the right way. I want to go in the right way. And I think he was a demonstration, I suppose, different to Artur Melo at Barcelona, that you can be going. And it needn't necessarily mean that you play badly.
The Tim Booney says, Harry Maguire has officially spent more time playing professional football this season than anyone else in the world. What has Barry spent more time doing this year than anyone else on earth?
I would imagine, well, nobody has watched more episodes of Morse than I have, I would suspect, because I watched all 33 of them during lockdown. So I'll go with that.
So you can only be equaled on Morse. I suspect no one has made a hat out of yogurt pots as big as you. And if they have, I would love to see it.
Possibly not. I don't know. Yeah. Someone may have done it as a project in fashion school or designer school. I'm not
this
sure.
This is where you need Norris McWhirter, isn't it, to clarify whether Barry is a yogurt pot hat-making record breaker.
Who's turning up at St. Martin's College, you know, London College of Fashion, and going, hang on, first term, I've got yogurt pot hat-making. I didn't know that was a thing. Anyway, tonight, Monday, Inter play Shakhtar. Mark, in a word, who's going to win that one?
Inter.
Mark, I was very impressed with Shakhtar against Basel. Are they very good or were Basel really, really bad?
No, I think that Shakhtar are the sort of team that have got the attacking talents to sort of beat teams at that kind of level that the Basel are at. Tyson and Marlos and the wonderfully named Alan Patrick behind Junior Moraesa. I think they can cause Inter problems. But if you have a look at their sort of results against, say, the bigger teams or in sort of Champions League, and Inter would be of a sort of Champions League level. They conceded three against City, three against Atalanta, three against Dynamo Zagreb, three against Benfica. You know, that this is the kind of level I think that where when they go up and take on a team that can maybe stop them, I don't really see how Shakhtar's defence can deal with Lukaku if Lukaku plays like he did against Leverkusen. I thought he was absolutely brilliant in that game.
Now, England have named a new manager of the women's football team. It is the Netherlands women's manager, Serena Wiegman. She'll succeed Phil Neville as England's head coach in September 2021. She signed a four-year deal. She won Euro 2017 on home soil, won a record 43 matches in charge of the team. A couple of rumours doing the rounds. The Thiago saga apparently has agreed terms with Liverpool, and Joe Hart going to Tottenham. That is the rumour doing the rounds today. FA Cup replays are going to be scrapped during next season to ease pressure on the football calendar. It's also been announced the Carabao Cup semi-finals will be one-legged and the first three rounds will be played in consecutive weeks. I wonder, Barry, the ending of FA Cup replays, I've seen a few people worried that, you know, they'll put this in now as an emergency measure and never bring it back, because it is important for lower league clubs and revenue. And a couple of ideas. One would be give the lower league side the option to move it away from home if they want to. I mean, this obviously means fans have to be back in the ground to make any gate receipts. Or perhaps seeding it so the bottom 20 sides in the third round draw get Premier League sides so they have that opportunity to make money. Thoughts?
I won't miss FA Cup replays, that's for sure. I don't think there's any need for them anymore. I do think the lower league side should be given the option of playing at home or away. I think that would make the competition more interesting. The other idea you promoted there about seeding teams, I might, without having given it more than a couple of seconds thought, I think sounds like a terrible idea.
Finally, Sam says, how long could Mark Langdon survive on a diet consisting entirely of Sid's ham? Mark.
Yeah, for the rest of my life. I absolutely love, I mean, that's one of the reasons to go to Spain, to just eat the ham on. I could eat that, and I have probably eaten that three meals a day when in Spain. Yeah, so.
I'll put a camp bed in the garage for you. And you can
just, like, super brilliant.
Lovely. Well, glad we got that sorted. And that'll do. Thank you, Estella, for today. Sid, you can go check on Estella. Thanks for your time, my friends.
Pleasure.
Cheers, Mark.
Thank you.
Thank you, Barry.
You're welcome.
We're going to be back on Wednesday because we're going to do the Champions League semi-final pod. So back on Wednesday and Thursday for those. We'll see you then.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.